admit she was vomiting again. Monique was released the next morning. Jordan never even bothered to come to the hospital. When Angel and Gerald helped the weakened Monique walk up the 6 flights of steps, they found Jordan half asleep on the living room couch.
"How you feel, Monique?"
he inquired sleepily.
"Neighbor told me what happened. I was just on my way down to the hospital. How'd you get home?"
Gerald and Angel stared coldly at Jordan and refused to answer. Monique, still fluttery in spite of her injuries, smiled at him from under her head bandage and told him,
"Ms. Walker next door gave me a ride. No problem. I knew you were coming. See, kids, I told you he was coming."
Angel and Gerald said nothing. Suddenly, Monique looked around wildly.
"Gerald, what happened to them cigarettes? I remember now. I went to get cigarettes for you, Jordan. I bet them ambulance men took them cigarettes. I'm sorry, Jordan. I got them for you, just like you said."
"It's okay, baby,"
Jordan crooned in his rocky voice. "You can get me some more another time when you get better. Come sit here by me." He patted a spot on the sofa. Monique grinned with relief and happiness. Jordan glanced at Gerald as he put his arm around her and gave him a hard, cold smile that said,
"I can do anything I want. You can't stop me."
Gerald, helpless for the moment, looked away, but he thought, "Maybe you're wrong, Jordan Sparks. You just might be wrong." Several days after the accident, Angel sat in a corner of her bedroom, stroking her cat and staring silently into space. Even Gerald couldn't get her to smile.
"Come on, Angel. Monique could be dead. She's just hurt, and she's healing slowly. I think from the inside out. Give it time."
Angel sighed.
"If she dies, doesn't make it, Gerald, all we got is Jordan. I can't bear to even think about it, and that's all I've been doing lately."
"Monique is not going to die," Gerald told her firmly. "If she was going to die, that taxi would have killed her." Angel just stared out of the window and stroked her sleeping cat. Finally, Gerald had an idea. He put a tape into her little cassette player and pushed play. It was the music to the dance she'd performed just a few months before. Angel at first refused to notice, but as the beauty of the music grew in intensity, all of the pain and memories of her past grew within her. She wept. She cried until she had no tears left. Finally, she stood up and moved lightly to the final strains of the melody.
"Thanks, Gerald," she said quietly. "I'm going to be okay."
"I know, Angel. You know you always got me." She smiled at him.
"Yeah, I know that. But first, I gotta make sure I got hold of me."
"What about Jordan?" Gerald asked her. "Looks like we're stuck with him, at least for now."
"I think he really cares about Mama, in his own twisted way. He seemed like he's trying to do right, and he doesn't bother me anymore, so we'll just have to wait and see."
"Yeah, but I still don't trust him."
"Me neither,"
Angel replied with a shudder. Rob's father called a couple of weeks after the accident.
"What's up, Gerald? How's your mom?"
"Well, the cuts and bruises have healed mostly, but she's like not all here yet. She's like a shadow instead of a real person."
"What do you mean?"
"It's like part of her is sort of unplugged. She knows us and talks to us, but it seems like she's always floating somewhere else. It's hard to put into words."
"Is she in any pain?"
"She keeps insisting that her head hurts or her back is on fire, but that's only when she runs out of her pain pills. Jordan kept her supplied with refills of her prescription, and when the doctor wouldn't give her any more, he brought these weird-looking shiny red pills and these bright blue and yellow pills that I ain't never seen before."
"Sounds like she's starting on another problem, Gerald."
"Yeah, I know. She's been straight for years. I think the accident gave her an excuse to start using again. I don't think she even knows what's happening.
These things take time, Gerald. And remember, you can't solve your mother's problems. Is she okay by herself during the day?
Yeah, she watches TV most of the day, just sitting here like a piece of furniture, except for the talk shows. She likes those. Sometimes she'll just laugh out loud at those outrageous folks who tell their private stuff to the world.
What about Jordan?
Well, only when Jordan comes home does it seem like she lights up a little. She combs her hair and changes her dress, but then it seems like she forgets why she did it. Then she cries, unless he's brought her some more pills. Then she's silly for a couple of hours before she passes out in front of the TV.
How does Jordan take that?
Jordan seems uncomfortable around her. I think he gives her the pills so he won't have to deal with her at all. He found another job, working nights, which me and Angel think is cool. We both sleep good at night because of it.
Angel hasn't called Kiara much lately. How's she doing?
It's hard to tell. Angel cries a lot, too, but I don't know how much of that is teenage girl stuff and how much is because Monique is all messed up.
But Jordan's not bothering her?
No, Gerald said with a sigh. At least that's not a problem right now. But Jordan isn't happy, and that's not good.
Why don't you and Angel come over this weekend? It's been a while.
Thanks, man, but I gotta keep an eye on Monique. Maybe Angel can come. She hasn't seen Kiara since school started.
Kiara's pulling on the phone. She wants to talk to Angel. In the meantime, take care, Gerald. Call me anytime. You know that.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
Gerald sighed and held the phone out to Angel.
Hey, Angel. Telephone. It's Kiara.
What's up, girl?
Kiara asked when Angel got on the telephone.
Not much. How's your ma?
She's not bleeding or anything, but all she does is sit and watch TV. Her mind kind of fades in and out, if you know what I mean. I think she's taken too many of those painkillers the doctors gave her.
Do you think it's going to get better?
Yeah, the doctor told Gerald that she'd be back to normal in a few months. But I sort of miss her, you know? The way she used to be.
Yeah, I hear you. Your mom always had it together. Her nails, her hair, and her shoes always matched.
Angel laughed. You got that right. And her clothes. Remember that time she went to work and we tried on all those dresses with the sparkles and the sequins? My mama was a real fancy lady.
She still is, Angel, Kiara reminded her. She's going to be back like she was. You'll see.
Yeah, I hope so.
You know, even though she wasn't always the best mother in the world, she's all I got.
Angel started to cry.
It's going to be okay, Angel. It's going to be okay.
Kiara soothed her friend over the phone.
You want to come over this weekend?
Yeah, that'll be cool.
I'll see if my dad can pick you up.
Thanks, Kiara. I'm glad I got somebody to talk to.
Hey, you can tell me anything, girl. Peace.
No, not everything, Angel thought as she hung up the phone. Some things had to stay in the secret places.
October was unusually hot. The temperature stayed in the 90s every day. School was unbearable for Gerald and Angel, and when they got home, the small apartment was hot and miserable. The electricity went out almost weekly. Power surges, the electric company said. After school, it was too hot to play basketball, too hot to dance, too hot even to eat. Angel had a small fan in her room. Gerald had nothing, but whatever breeze decided to find his window. Monique in Jordan's room had a small window air conditioner, but she kept the door closed, watching what Gerald called the parade of weirdos on the talk shows. Even when the power went off, Monique sat in front of the TV. Sometimes she laughed at the dull, empty screen. She wasn't getting much better. She used beer now instead of water to wash down the pills that Jordan brought her.
Here, Monique, drink some ice water, Gerald said to her. It will keep you cool in all this heat.
Water makes me gag,
Monique said without taking her eyes from the TV screen. Bring me another beer. It settles my stomach. And one of those red pills from the doctor. Gotta do what the doctor said. Gerald sighed and left the ice water next to her bed. He knew she would get up and get the beer herself while the ice slowly melted in the water glass. Jordan hated the heat. He stayed in their room, ignoring Monique and her non-stop television, with the air conditioner turned up as high as it could get and blowing directly on him. When the power went out, he cursed and fussed and left the apartment in a fury, heading for a bar where he could sit in cool air, sipping cold drinks. The trouble began on an especially hot Saturday. Angel usually enjoyed Saturday mornings because she had them to herself. Jordan, who was working days now, had gone to work, and Gerald had found a part-time job at the fried chicken store around the corner. She would turn the music up really loud and dance through the apartment, with Tiger her only audience. Jordan slammed open the front door, cursing the heat and cursing his job. He kicked the cat as it scurried to get out of his way. Angel looked up, alarmed, and ran to her bedroom. She heard Jordan yank open his bedroom door with fury. It was then that she heard him bellow, "Who stole my air conditioner?" Monique smiled sweetly when she saw Jordan, totally unaware of his raging anger. "Monique, you witless idiot! What did you do to my air conditioner?" She glanced over to the gaping hole where the air conditioning unit had been and gasped. She hadn't even noticed that it was gone. Monique looked confused and tried to remember, but gave up with a small shrug of her shoulders, then headed back toward her favorite chair to watch TV.
"I don't know, Jordan. I'm sorry. I should have watched it better. I'm sorry."
Jordan could take no more. He raised his arm above his head and slapped Monique with the back of his hand so hard that she fell onto the bed. Pain and confusion filled her face as she reached up to feel her bruised and bleeding lip.
"I said I was sorry,"
she mumbled through her tears. Jordan looked at her with disgust and stomped out of the room. Angel peeked her head out of her door, but darted back in when she saw the look on Jordan's face. He was purple with rage. He stormed across the room and got to his bedroom door just as Gerald was coming back from his job. His fist hit Gerald full in the face. Blood spurted from Gerald's nose and lip as he staggered to the floor.
"That'll teach you to steal my stuff,"
Jordan roared at Gerald as he left. The sound of his cowboy boots on the steps thundered, then gradually faded away. Gerald sat on the floor, stunned. Angel ran from her room.
"Are you okay?" she asked fearfully.
"Yeah, I think so," replied Gerald, who was getting more angry than scared.
"What set his fire off?"
"Somebody stole his air conditioner from the window."
"So let him sweat like the rest of us," Gerald retorted.
"I wonder if he got into some trouble at his job," Angel added. "He's home so early."
"I hope he didn't get fired," groaned Gerald. "That means big trouble."
Gerald went to the bathroom and wiped the blood from his nose, which was bleeding but did not seem to be broken. He was angry, hot, seething angry. But he knew that, because of Angel, he had to control himself. He also knew that a final showdown with Jordan had to come. Monique emerged from the bedroom then, lips bloody and face swollen from crying.
"Mama!"
Angel screamed.
"I didn't know he hit you too! Mama, are you okay?"
"Sure, baby, I'm fine, I'm fine. You know what? I didn't like that. I didn't like that at all."
"Monique, here's a washcloth. Wash your face. Are you going to be okay? Should I call the doctor?" Gerald asked. Monique washed her face obediently. She looked as if she had just awakened from a terrible nightmare.
"No, I didn't like that at all," she repeated. "I don't think I'm going to let him hit me anymore."
"Did he hit you too, Gerald?"
"That's not good. Not very good. No, we're not going to let him do this anymore."
Angel and Gerald looked at each other in amazement. Monique was almost making sense. She still didn't sound quite normal, but she was making some kind of sense. Maybe Jordan's slap had made her come to her senses. Angel hugged her mother.
We gonna be okay, Mama?
We gonna be okay, baby, Monique repeated. Angel hoped that Monique was really on the way back to her. Monique smiled at her daughter. The moment faded.
Almost time for police patrol,
Monique said suddenly.
My lip hurts. Where did I put those pills?
She wandered back into the bedroom. Angel sighed in disappointment and let Monique return to the bedroom and the TV. She's getting better, Angel, Gerald said with a touch of enthusiasm. If we can flush those pills down the toilet, she might be okay. In the meantime, speaking of that TV show, do you think we should call the police? Angel thought for a moment.
Are you hurt?
Not really, Gerald admitted. But he had no business hitting me, and I'm sure not going to let him hit Monique again. Suppose he decides to hit you next time. Angel considered carefully.
Is Monique hurt?
She asked Gerald. I think she's all right, but her lip is going to take a day or two to heal.
Let's think this thing out. If we call the police, they will take Jordan away.
Good, Gerald replied with force.
Maybe not, Angel said thoughtfully. How long will he stay in jail? A week? A month? And what will he do to get back at us when he gets out?
And he will get out. Gerald looked at Angel in amazement and admiration. At 13, she was really pretty, with her golden brown skin and long, slightly fuzzy ponytail that she liked to toss as she walked. The problems of the past had given her a toughness and strength that most girls her age had yet to find.
So you think we shouldn't call the police?
He asked her. Gerald was used to making the decisions for all of them. It was a good feeling to be able to listen to her input.
I'm not sure. I just think that right now we need the money he's bringing in.
Mama's not quite right yet. She's probably not even capable of filing charges. There's no telling where her mind might be when the police get here. They might take her away, too, and split me and you up.
I couldn't deal with that.
Okay, Gerald said slowly. No police this time. But he gets no more chances. I just hope we've made the right decision.
Me too, she added with fear in her voice. Me too.
21. Jordan did not return until the next morning. Monique refused to smile at him this time. She rolled her eyes, frowned at him, and refused even to speak. She turned the TV up as loud as it would go and ignored him. He looked at Gerald, but did not apologize. Jordan had bought donuts and milk, along with fresh fruit and a dozen eggs. Angel unpacked the groceries quietly. Except for the blaring of the TV coming from Monique's room, all was silent. Jordan knew that they had not called the police. He knew that they should have, and he understood why they didn't. He accepted the silent conversation, agreeing to their unspoken terms. They understood each other. The incident was not mentioned again. Jordan found another job, sweeping up in a factory, but he hated it and was tense, restless, and irritable. Gerald was surprised he stayed around. Monique had many good days now. Gerald and Angel watered down her beer, and when she asked for her pills, they brought her multivitamins instead. Gerald had flushed the pills Jordan brought her. He and Angel had cheered as they circled down to the sewer where they belonged. Monique never even noticed the switch. She was like a flower that had been battered by a storm, but not quite destroyed. Gradually, she began to strengthen and bloom again.
"Isn't it time for basketball, Gerald?" she asked one day.
"Yeah," he answered with surprise. "We practice every day."
"I remember," she replied foggily. "You play for the Lions."
"No, Monique, but you're close. It's the Tigers, the Hazelwood Tigers."
"Oh, yeah," she smiled vaguely. "Tigers."
Gerald was a starter this basketball season, along with Robbie Washington and Andy Jackson. He felt good about himself for the first time in a long time.
Rob's dad came to every game and cheered them all on. Angel was dancing again. Monique faded away less often. And Jordan, although always tense and irritable, left them alone. Gerald looked forward to his basketball games, for the physical release, and when he could, he liked to hang with the boys on the team. He didn't have many friends, so Andy, Rob, and BJ meant a lot to him, although he never told them. Angel stayed with a neighbor until Gerald got home, but he didn't like to stay out too late. He still didn't trust Jordan. The game of November 7 went well. Gerald felt relaxed, and although he was nowhere near the high scorer, he had played one of his best games. "Hey, Gerald, what's up, man?" asked Rob as he changed his shoes.
"Nothing much. Cold-blooded game, Rob. 27 points. You be dealing out there,"
Gerald replied with real admiration.
"What can I say? College scouts from all over the world are knocking on my door, begging me to drive 6 new Cadillacs to their school to instruct the women in the dorms on the finer points of, shall we say, scoring, and to teach skinny little farm boys what it is."
Gerald laughed at Rob's usual foolishness.
"Andy, I don't see why you hang with this big-head fool, except maybe to learn some basketball. What you score tonight, 4?
"Hey, Gerald, I thought you was my man. You sound like the coach,
and it was 6 points, thank you."
"I got more important things on my mind tonight," added Andy with fake dignity.
"Yeah, maybe Keisha can teach him some basketball," teased Rob. "You want to go with us tonight, Gerald? We got some brew, and we're just going to be chilling."
"Nah, Rob, I got to be getting home to check on my little sister. And my old man, you know how he is.
Besides, who would want to be seen with 2 dudes named after a couple of dead presidents anyway?"
Gerald laughed as he packed up his gym bag.
"Forget you, man. You seen BJ and Tyrone?" Rob asked.
"Yeah, man. They're waiting for you out by Andy's car."
"Hey, Andy, when you gonna get that raggedy red car of yours painted?"
Rob yelled across the locker room.
"When my old man gets tired of looking at it, I guess," Andy yelled back, laughing. "He said something about a reward if my grades get better, but you know how that is."
"Yeah, man, parents be tripping.
Still, at least you got a car. But don't get me talking about fathers. He's the reason why I got a raise out of here now."
"Where y'all going?"
Gerald asked.
"No particular place. We just gonna chill,"
Andy grinned.
"We might try to find a party, or we might just finish off them beers and let the party find us. Then I'm heading over to Keisha's house after I take these turkeys home."
"Don't let Keisha find out you've been drinking. You know she'll go off."
"Not to worry, Gerald, my man. Not to worry. I'm out of here. Peace."
Gerald caught the first bus and was probably home before Andy and Rob had finished their first 6-pack. Jordan was still at work, so Gerald got Angel from next door and fixed them both a couple of Aunt Queen's Scram Burglars. They were watching the late news when the phone rang.
"Gerald, this is Keisha. Have you seen Andy?"
"Nah, I went home right after the game. But Andy and Rob and I think Tyrone and BJ too left together in Andy's car. Andy said he was coming by your house after he took those clowns home. He ain't there yet?"
"No. Well, if he calls you, tell him to get in touch with me right away, okay? Hey, you haven't heard anything about any accidents, have you?"
"Why is it the first thing a girl thinks about if her boyfriend is late is that he's been in an accident? I bet he's in the backseat of his car kissing all over some real sexy woman."
"All you fellas are alike. Worthless. Call me if you hear anything, okay?"
"Sure. Later."
Gerald knew that Andy, Rob, and Tyrone were planning to drink tonight after the game. Keisha's call had him a little worried. Andy was silly, but he wasn't stupid. Besides, they were only 17. What could possibly happen? Gerald sat next to the phone, thinking about how things had gradually changed since last year. Sure, Andy was still silly, making yo-yo grades, Rob was still the best player on the team, Tyrone spent most of his time with Rhonda, and BJ was still short. But now, Andy drove to school every day. Gerald thought it was odd that of the 4 of them, Andy, who had the worst grades, was the only one who had been given a car by his folks. Andy's parents rarely came to their games, but Andy always had plenty of money to spend on food, on the latest CDs, and on beer. Most of the boys, all except BJ, had started drinking. At parties, after games, after school, beer was easy to get and felt better than soda pop on a Saturday night. Even Gerald, who had seen up close the awful things a drunken man can do, would split a six-pack with Andy and Rob. It made him feel strong and in charge of his life. He was tired of being scared and depressed and worried all the time. The beer made him forget. He liked that. Rob's dad didn't know, and Andy's dad didn't notice. So splitting a few beers after a game had become routine. They can handle it, Gerald thought. They probably just found a new place to party tonight. Girls worry too much. But when he didn't hear anything more after an hour, he called Keisha back. Her dad's answering machine picked up. BJ's line was busy. So was Andy's. There was no answer at Rob's house. Finally, he reached Rhonda. Hey, Rhonda, what's up? Keisha called me looking for Andy. You seen him?
No, Gerald. Didn't anybody call you? There was an accident. Rob's dead. Andy ran into a wall, there was an explosion, and they all got out except for Rob. Rob's dead. I can't deal with this. I feel like I'm gonna explode.
Gerald hung up the phone and sat down in a heap on the floor. He was too stunned to even cry. He was sitting there shaking when Angel walked into the room.
What's wrong, Gerald?
She asked gently. Gerald could barely breathe. All of the pain of the past crowded in on him. Aunt Queen's death, Monique's accident, Jordan's abuses. He sobbed finally with huge, burning explosions of pain. He wept for several minutes. Angel sat next to him, feeling his sorrow, understanding his grief.
It could have been me. They wanted me to come with them tonight, but I didn't. And now Rob's dead. It could have been me. It could have been me.
Angel's tears dripped softly onto the cold wooden floor.
Not Robbie. Oh, please, not Robbie.
Gerald couldn't help her this time. His own grief threatened to strangle him.
Robbie can't be dead. Robbie can't be dead.
Gerald repeated wordlessly to himself. Not Robbie. Not cool, silly, fun-loving Rob. Gerald felt weak and heavy. He felt like he couldn't breathe, like a stone wall was sitting on his chest with the bricks running through his veins. Nothing worked right or felt normal. He couldn't cry anymore. He could only hold his head between his arms to try and block the vision that slipped in anyway. The fire, the screams, the silence. Gerald suddenly shuddered.
What about Rob's dad? I've been so busy trying to make this fit inside my head that I forgot all about Robbie's family. Oh my God, they must be ripped!
Gerald ran to the phone and punched the numbers with fear and ferocity. The pleasant voice of the answering machine that never had to feel sorrow or pain answered cheerfully, "You have reached the Washington residence. Please leave your number and have a nice day." Gerald hung up in despair. He didn't think he would ever have another nice day as long as he lived.
Angel, I gotta go over there. Rob's dad was there for me. I gotta go. Let me go with you. Kiara's gonna need someone who knows how to cry. And that's one thing I know about. You got bus money?
Yeah, let's go. Gerald and Angel walked from the bus stop in silence. It was late, well after midnight, and the stars sparkled faintly above the streetlight. Angel glanced up.
How can the stars still shine, Gerald?
I don't know. It seems like the world ought to stop or something. Like they ought to not show up tonight, at least.
How can the world keep on going like nothing's happened?
They walked up to Rob's driveway just as the Washingtons were pulling in. Kiara's door opened slowly, but she just sat there. Angel walked over to the car and offered her hand. Kiara reached toward her hesitantly and touched Angel's trembling fingers. She got out then and collapsed in huge sobs in her friend's arms. Angel, standing under the shadow of Rob's basketball net on the garage door, glanced at the uncaring stars and waited until Kiara's storm was reduced to sniffles and sobs.
Rob's mom walked unsteadily to the house, let the dog out, took the mail from the mailbox, and after finishing with the meaningless details of the moment, sat down on the front steps, shivering and helpless. Mr. Washington picked up Rob's basketball and held it in his hands, staring at its roundness, feeling the ridges and lumps on it, softly repeating Rob's name.
Robbie, 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 Robbie.
Gerald walked over to him and placed his hand on the older man's shoulder, just as Rob's dad had done for him on that day that now seemed so long ago. Mr. Washington trembled and touched Gerald's hand. His eyes said thanks, but his lips could not yet speak. Too many other words and thoughts were crowded in his mind that evening. He went to his wife and took her hand, and together they walked over to Kiara. The three of them glanced at the basketball net, and Rob's father let the ball drop with a dull thud to the driveway. It rolled to Gerald's feet. Gerald picked it up slowly. Holding it seemed to help erase some of the confusion that clogged his mind. "Can I hold on to this for a little?" he asked hesitantly.
"Please do," answered Mr. Washington huskily. "He would want..."
Rob's father finally wept. Mrs. Washington and Kiara took him into the house then. Mrs. Washington glanced back. "I'm sorry," she said to Gerald. "Did you and Angel want to stay over?" "Oh, no, we just came to be with you all for a little bit. We gotta get back home now. Call us. We'll be around." Rob's mom smiled, then closed the door softly behind her. Gerald and Angel walked silently into the darkness, back to the darkness of their own home. Robbie Washington's funeral was held on a Saturday. More than 500 teachers, students, parents, and friends attended. Andy, the driver of the car, sat bandaged and dazed in the third row. Gerald, consumed with grief, sat silently next to Andy, consumed with guilt. "Pain is lonesome," thought Gerald, as he watched all the kids at school caught up in their grief. "You gotta deal with it all alone." Gerald noticed with anger that neither of Andy's parents had come to the funeral. During the recessional, Rob's mother stopped for a moment at the third row. She glanced at Gerald with brief despair and moved on. She would not even look at Andy. After Rob's funeral, Gerald wanted to quit the basketball team. It was no longer any fun without Rob's silliness and Andy's teasing competition with Rob for points, for food, even for girls. Andy took Rob's death the hardest. He and Robbie had been so close, and he could not overcome feeling responsible for Rob's death. Although most of the kids at school were understanding, some of them also had trouble with it. Andy found the word "killer" taped to his locker one day. Coach Ripley thought that keeping the team together and finishing the season would help to save them all. Andy was made captain of the team in Rob's place. Gerald knew that Andy was proud, but that he felt uncomfortable as well. Andy knew he couldn't fill Rob's shoes. He wasn't sleeping well, and his grades, which were never very good, got even worse. His parents sent him to a psychologist for counseling, which seemed to help a bit, but Gerald could see how much he was hurting. Gerald knew about hurt. He lived with it all the time. His life, from the moment his mother had abandoned him when he was 3, had been a series of disappointments and hardships. But he managed to keep his head above water most of the time. And whenever he felt like sinking, he had Angel to hold him up. But Rob's death was different. Rob was young and talented and had a bright future. He'd had 2 parents who adored him, not at all like the abusive Jordan and helpless Monique. Gerald couldn't understand why Rob was gone and he still lived. He started coming home late from games, walking the 5 miles instead of riding the bus. He felt like he couldn't breathe on the bus anymore. Walking helped him to think and to clear the confusion in his head. Entering the apartment around midnight one night, Gerald was surprised to see Angel there with Jordan. "What are you doing here?" he growled at Jordan.
"I live here."
"I always get Angel from Miss Martin's house," stated Gerald with suspicion.
"Miss Martin had to leave," Jordan replied.
"It's okay, Gerald," Angel added to reassure him. "Jordan took me to get something to eat. Everything is fine."
Gerald didn't like it, but he said nothing. He went to sleep, exhausted, and slept without dreaming. Angel woke Gerald the next morning with a surprise. It was Saturday, and she knew he had 2 tournament games to play, so she had fixed him some lumpy grits and a piece of toast with cherry jelly. He grinned at her.
"Why are you being so nice?" "'Cause you've been funky blue since Rob died. I thought you needed some cheering up."
Angel, at 13, was thin and reserved, but when she smiled, her eyes revealed a glow she rarely displayed otherwise. "Any problem with Jordan?" asked Gerald as he licked his fingers. Angel sighed. Her smile faded a bit.
"No, not at all. He's been polite and calm for weeks now. He spends a lot of time at the bar down the street, and he doesn't even look at me anymore. I think that bad stuff is over. I think he's trying, at least."
"Well, I still don't trust him. As soon as I graduate from high school, me and you are getting out of here."
"Where will we go?" Angel asked with a little fear. "And what about Mama?"
"Maybe Monique has already left us," Gerald mused. "But we can live somewhere far away from Jordan Sparks." Angel didn't see any way out. She glanced down with resignation.
"We're stuck here for a while," she said quietly.
"Maybe."
"Hey, how's your dancing?"
She grinned again.
"Delicious. We have a spring show coming up. I think I'm going to get the lead. Will you come see me?"
"Well, I may be busy. There's a rerun of a frisbee tournament that I may want to catch on TV. She took one of his pillows and popped him on his head. He grabbed the other pillow and they chased each other, screaming and laughing through the house. They didn't even notice when Jordan's door opened.
"What's all that foolishness?" he yelled.
"Sorry," said Angel, suddenly quiet.
Amazingly, Jordan smiled.
"No problem," he said. "Just don't wake up the neighbors."
Gerald and Angel looked at each other with disbelief. Jordan closed his door.
"Maybe I was right," said Angel with quiet hope.
Gerald said nothing. Gerald left for the basketball tournament feeling better than he had in a long time. The sky was clear and the air was fresh and chilly. Angel had dance lessons, or he would have taken her with him. But she seemed relaxed and knew to go to Miss Martin's apartment after dance. Angel got home late in the afternoon, humming with excitement and happiness. She bounced up the stairs, her light steps barely touching them. She knocked on Miss Martin's door, but it was locked, and no one answered. Puzzled, but not concerned, Angel went to her own apartment. No one, not even Monique, was home. Just the way she liked it. She got a couple of hot dogs out of the refrigerator and put them in a pot on the stove to boil. Waiting for the hot dogs, she put in a cassette and turned the music up loud. She was dancing the steps of the lead part, practicing the part she knew she'd get. She heard only the music, only the beautiful music. She did not hear Jordan enter the room. She smelled him before she heard him, before she saw him. He had been drinking, heavily. His eyes were red and glassy. His lips were parted, and his breath reeked with foul, sour fumes. Angel was more surprised than afraid. It had only been a few hours before that Jordan had actually been smiling. He was smiling once again, but it was the smile of the monster that lived within Jordan Sparks. Angel, who was starting to feel the danger of the situation, started to back toward the door. She wished she had run out when he'd first walked in, but she had stopped being wary, stopped being afraid. By losing her fear, she had lost her chance.
"Where's Mama?"
Angel asked warily.
"She ain't here."
He walked toward her.
"Don't start, Jordan. Please."
Angel was beginning to feel dizzy. Jordan lurched forward and grabbed her arm.
"You think you're pretty cute, don't you?"
"No, Jordan, just let me go. Let me fix you something to eat."
"I ain't hungry. I want some female companionship. I ain't even talked to a woman since your mama run like a fool in front of that car. Come here," he commanded. "Let's talk."
Angel, eyes wide with fear, yanked free of his grip and ran screaming toward the door.
"Can't nobody hear you,"
Jordan snarled as he moved in front of the door and locked it.
"It's just me and you."
He grabbed her again, both arms this time, and dragged her, kicking and screaming, toward her bedroom.
"You can't do this," she cried. "I'm only 13. I'm your daughter. How can you do this to me? No, stop."
"You ain't my daughter,"
Jordan sneered as he tried to force her to the bed.
"You skinny little weakling. Your mama had lots of boyfriends. You ain't none of mine."
The months of exercise and dance practice had made Angel a lot stronger than Jordan expected, but he still managed to have her under his power with little difficulty. Weeping and terrified, Angel begged him to leave her alone. When he touched her face, she screamed again. He slapped her. She shuddered with despair. In the kitchen, the pot of hot dogs, which had long since boiled out of water, was seething and shaking on top of the wild gas flames. The meat, crisp and split, ignited into a small flame, which found new fuel in the spots of grease upon the stove. Soon the whole stove was covered with hot flames that licked and devoured everything they touched. The apartment had no smoke alarm, so Jordan never even noticed the smoke or the smell. After the tournament, Gerald got off the bus feeling vaguely uneasy. He wished again that he could live someplace where graffiti didn't decorate every empty corner, where trees grew thick enough to get lost in. He glanced toward his building, standing tall and dark against the sky, puffs of thin gray smoke coming from an upstairs window. Smoke? Gerald thought. He was running before he was even aware of it. As he rushed up the 6 flights of stairs, he remembered the taste of smoke in his mouth, the touch of the smoke-filled air in his nose and lungs, and the colors of the bright orange heat. He thought back to that long-ago day behind the couch of his mother's house, the fear, the flames, the sweet silent peace of a final sleep. And then he thought of Angel. He knew that the smoke was coming from his apartment. He knew that Angel was up there, and he knew that Jordan was with her. He screamed, "Angel!" He could hear the sirens faintly in the distance, but his thoughts were only on Angel and the top of the stairs. When he reached the door, he pounded on it so hard his fists throbbed. "Angel!" he shouted. "Angel!" He tried the other apartments on the floor, but the doors were either flung open or locked. Everyone had either fled the fire or was out. Finding only silence and smoke, Gerald fumbled hastily for his key.
"Please don't let me be too late," he silently prayed. "Where is Jordan?" he wondered as he dropped the key. "And where is Monique? Is Angel in there alone?"
Gerald found the key and turned the lock fiercely to the right. When the cool outside air from the hall rushed inside, the flames swelled and raged. Gerald panicked a moment as his memories of flames engulfed him. He wanted to run and hide behind a sofa and wait for Mama to come.
"Mama will be here soon."
"No. Mama is downstairs, high again, gone again, gone again."
"No!"
he said fiercely as he thought of Angel. He glanced toward the kitchen, which the flames were consuming with glee, and headed across the living room toward Angel's bedroom. Flames flickered around the edges of the floor. He knew he only had seconds.
"Where is Jordan?" Gerald kept thinking.
He opened Angel's door, expecting to find her huddled under the bed or screaming at the window. Instead, what he saw made him forget the fire, forget the danger, forget the fears of the past. Angel lay on her bed, barely conscious. Jordan was walking slowly toward the foot of her bed. So intent was he that he didn't even notice Gerald.
"Don't you touch her, you perverted bastard!"
Jordan spun around, amazed, and lunged toward Gerald with his fists.
"I should have killed you years ago," Jordan said with a quiet ferocity. "You the one that sent me to jail. I ain't forgot that."
The room stank of Jordan's suffocating cologne, stifling smoke, and fear.
"Don't you know the house is on fire, fool?"
Gerald said, stepping back two paces. Jordan seemed to be suddenly aware of the heat, the smell of the flames, and the fire in Gerald's eyes. Ignoring them for the moment, he lunged toward Gerald again and knocked him to the ground. Gerald's head hit the edge of Monique's TV. He saw fire as the pain stunned him for a moment. He didn't even notice the blood from the cut at first. The TV tottered for a moment, then plunged with a crash to the floor. The heavy iron television stand fell over seconds later, shattering the bedroom window. The cold air that rushed in gave Gerald the fresh breaths he needed, but it also fueled the anger of the flames in the apartment and in Jordan Sparks.
"That's the last time you're ever going to touch me or Angel," Gerald swore through clenched teeth.
He jumped up and swung at Jordan fiercely, but missed. Gerald tried to dart out of the way of Jordan's kick, but he wasn't fast enough. With the steel toe of his cowboy boots, Jordan kicked Gerald squarely on his shin. Gerald screamed in pain. He heard the bone crack. He fell once again. Angel, coughing and dizzy, struggled to sit up as the smoke began to come in through the open door. Gerald glanced over at the helpless Angel, eased himself across the floor, and grabbed Jordan's leg. Jordan was stronger, but he was drunk and confused. Gerald no longer felt fear or pain, only anger over the past. For Aunt Queen's lost hugs and Angel's lost innocence. For Monique's dim weaknesses, Andy's unbearable guilt, and for Rob's fiery destruction. All of that was focused into his final lunge at Jordan. He reached for Jordan's leg and pulled hard. Jordan stumbled, then fell with a crashing thud to the floor. Stunned only for a moment, he got up, glared at Gerald, saw the growing intensity of the fire, and moved toward the open door. He never even glanced back at Angel, who was conscious and crying. Gerald struggled to stand as he heard Angel sobbing faintly. He pulled himself up to the bed. Angel, almost hysterical, was sucking in huge gulps of the smoke-filled air. As he reached her, she shuddered and then lay still.
"Angel!"
he yelled. Ignoring the pain in his leg and head, he covered her with a blanket and lifted her gently from the bed. She felt light in his arms, like a spirit, he thought, as he shivered in spite of the heat. He could no longer see. He limped through the darkness and smoke toward the open door. The room began to spin as the darkness and the flames attacked Gerald. He wanted to hide behind the sofa. He wanted to let the flames take away all the pain forever. But he remembered Angel and dragged himself toward the door, which seemed so far away. As he approached the doorway, he could no longer remember which way to go. Dark, thick smoke filled the top of the opening. Gerald coughed and stumbled. A large, hard object blocked the doorway. Gerald fell over it and rolled out of the door into the hall. In spite of his confusion and pain, he still managed to hang on to Angel. On the floor, he discovered the air was just a bit clearer. Gerald wiped his stinging eyes and saw that the stairs were smoky, but not yet on fire. Staying close to the floor, he snaked himself down the first flight of stairs, gently dragging the limp, unconscious body of Angel with him. He stopped at the landing, gasping and heaving, barely able to breathe the thin, clear air near the floor. He heard thuds. He saw large black rubber boots. He heard voices.
"Hey, get some oxygen up here. We found them."
He heard clicks. He had heard that sound before, the click of a high-heeled shoe on a wooden step. Going away, fading into the distance. But these clicks were close, then closer. They were hard and demanding and attached to a voice. Monique's.
"I told you my kids was in here. Hurry up,"
she demanded shrilly. Do something! I think they're dead! Where's Jordan? Monique screamed hysterically. Ma'am, let us do our job. We told you not to follow. Max, get her out of here! Gerald grinned weakly just before he passed out. Monique. Just in time this time. Just in time. 24. Angel's eyelids fluttered, then her eyes rolled in fear as she thrashed her arms wildly, pulling off the oxygen mask and screaming in terror. The paramedic held her arms gently and spoke softly. It's gonna be okay. Relax. You swallowed quite a bit of smoke up there.
Jordan. No. Fire.
She whispered incoherently.
Oh, Gerald, make it stop. Make it stop. Where's Gerald?
She asked with sudden fear. He's right here, right next to you. He saved your life, you know. Angel relaxed when she saw him. Gerald, with large bandages on his head and his leg and an oxygen mask on his face, grinned at her.
You look like something out of a monster movie, she croaked.
Her voice was raspy from the smoke.
What happened, Gerald?
I'm not sure, Gerald said slowly. I remember carrying you and falling and... Monique. Monique's shoes on the steps, he said, remembering. Monique peeked her head into the back of the ambulance then. How's my babies?
Ain't no babies here, Mama,
Angel whispered with a weak smile.
I think we're gonna be okay.
Gerald frowned. Monique, where's Jordan? He left us there to die in the fire. He had Angel. He was trying to... He tried to kill me! Monique's smile faded. The paramedic and a police officer looked into the back of the ambulance. Do you feel up to talking, son? Gerald nodded. At the word son, he thought of Rob's dad. He knew Mr. Washington was only a phone call away. That made him feel better, relaxed and safe. There was another man in the apartment, the police officer said. Was he a relative? He's no relation of mine, growled Gerald with hatred in his voice. His name is Jordan Sparks. He claims to be Angel's father, but he's mean and hateful, and he's a child molester. There, I said it, Monique. He tried to molest Angel, and he's dead. The police officer cut in. Dead? He died trying to get out of the apartment. Gerald thought back to the haze and confusion of the fire. He remembered stumbling and falling over something. Or was it someone?
Where did you find him?
He was lying right by the door, the officer said. We think he slipped. He had on new boots with slick soles. And steel toes, Gerald thought. And he must have fallen trying to run out of the apartment.
Running out on you, Monique admitted slowly. I think, Gerald said slowly, that Jordan is the reason we're still alive. I fell over his body on the way out of the door. That put us on the floor where the air was breathable and let me find the steps.
And let us find you, the firefighter added. Monique began to weep. She wept not for Jordan, whose spark was finally snuffed out, but for all of the flames of pain and hatred he had caused.
May I ride with them?
She asked the paramedic when she could speak again. He nodded. Maybe you should ask them, he added, pointing to Gerald and Angel. Angel, whose face was covered with tears, held out her arms to her mother. Gerald, relieved that they were alive and Jordan was not, smiled and nodded. As Monique climbed into the back of the ambulance, an orange ball of fur leaped in front of her.
Tiger!
Angel smiled with relief. The cat snuggled close to her and glared at the paramedic, who just smiled and pretended not to see it. The siren screamed as they rode to the hospital.
How do you like the music I picked for our ride downtown? Gerald teased Angel.
It's fine for the movie soundtrack, but I couldn't dance to it.
She smiled and drifted off to sleep. With the flames and fear behind them, Gerald and Angel rode together to the music of the sirens, which had decorated their past and would forge their future.
The End. You've been listening to Forged by Fire by Sharon M. Draper, narrated by Thomas Penny. This work is copyrighted 1997 by Sharon M. Draper. This recording is copyrighted 2001 by Recorded Books. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.